Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
What do you think? Like I said, I'm not surprised this happened. I'm not nervous because I'm a little nervous, but I don't think we're going to get into a long ground war, regime change, any of that nonsense like we did with Iraq. So that's the good news. And it seems as if now Iran is hitting back with just a show base and not actually to cause more destruction. That's where we stand. How do you feel? 855-839-1210. Our buddy Pastor Bill Devlin is first up this hour. Pastor, how are you today, my friend?
Hey, I'm grateful, Brother Rich, to be the official chaplain of the Rich Zeoli Army, although I'm actually in the Rich Zeoli Air Force because I have been to Iran and I have traveled to five different cities there. It's been about 6 years ago, but I'm very grateful that President Trump did what he did, because unfortunately, the Iranian mullahs that I've met with, both here in the U.S. and in Iran, they have no interest in peaceful coexistence. You know, our friends at the Abraham Accords are always talking about peaceful coexistence. I can tell you, Brother Rich, from first-hand experience, that the mullahs in Iran have no interest in peaceful coexistence. They lie when they talk. And when I was over there about 7 years ago, I was there to free a Iranian-American pastor by the name of Zayed Abedini. And I was not able to free him, but that was part of the money that Obama sent over there. And, you know, Iran is a mess. I was there with the Christians. There are many underground churches. There's hundreds of underground churches. And they, Rich, they are yearning for freedom from the mullahs. And so that's why I went over there to free this pastor. But I also met with the leaders of the underground church, attempting to encourage them and support them and help them.
That I think it's very, very important. And I agree with you. They don't want peace with us. They don't want to be friends with us. They're not the proverbial adults in the room. No question about it.
Yeah, well, they're not the Boy Scouts either. And so I'm very grateful that President Trump, and I say this as a lifelong Democrat and as a duly elected Democrat committeeman in the People's Republic of Philadelphia, that, you know, I support President Trump. I mean, these folks in Iran do not understand peaceful coexistence. You know, death to America, death to Israel. I'm a long-term supporter of Israel. And unfortunately, you know, we had to do this. And all the naysayers are saying, well, President Trump should not do this. I mean, it was the best thing ever, because given any day, the mullahs going back to 1979, when they wanted to, when they did take over the nation of Iran, you know, that was, if anyone of your listeners has seen the film Argo, I mean, that's a great representation of what our nation, and then the Beirut bombing, losing hundreds of U.S. Marines. Myself, as a combat decorated Purple Heart veteran from Vietnam in the U.S. Navy, I mean, that broke my heart, what happened in 1983 with the bombing of the Beirut the Beirut U.S. Marines where they
Bill,
were.
Bill, you're kind of breaking up a little bit. First of all, I thank you for your service again, as always. We are so grateful for that. You're breaking up. Are you on location somewhere?
Okay. Yeah. I'm on location in the People's Republic of Philadelphia, but I also
Let's just have a bad connection then. All right. You also mentioned you want. Bill?
I'm here.
Yeah, you also mentioned you had an event you wanted to promote.
Right. So this Wednesday, Rich, at 10 a.m., I will be as Pastor Devlin at the Criminal Justice Center at 1301 Filbert Street this Wednesday, June 25th, in support of slain Temple University Sergeant Christopher Fitzgerald. And, you know, the trial is going on right now, jury selection, and I encourage everyone to join me, all the Rich Zeoli Army, this Wednesday at 10 a.m. at 1301 Filbert Street in Philadelphia, so we can pray and then go into the trial and support the family of slain Temple University police officer Sergeant Christopher Fitzgerald. It's this Wednesday, 2 days from now, 10 a.m. at the Criminal Justice Center, 1301 Filbert Street, 10 a.m. Wednesday, June 25th. Please come. I'll be there. I'll greet you, and we'll go up to the trial and pray.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for calling the show, my.
Okay, God bless.
And get a better cell phone. I'm sorry, it's breaking up really, really bad, but I think we got the gist of Bill's important point. Another Bill in Delco. Bill, how are you?
Hey, Rich. It's an honor to speak with you. Been a long
Thank
time
you
listener.
For calling.
No problem. Just a general displeasure with Trump's behavior since pretty much coming into office. I didn't vote for this. The
Did you vote for him?
These, yeah.
Did?
Quite MAGA. And when I stop at McDonald's, I point my car in the general direction of Mar-a-Lago while eating three double cheeseburgers. That being said, the expansion of the surveillance state, curtailing of freedom of speech.
Well, it's. And, hang on. What do you mean by the curtailing of the expansion of the surveillance?
He really wants to make AI and $500 million into it, with the head of Oracle saying that everyone will behave themselves because they're all being watched.
Well, wait a second. The AI bill, which is very controversial, no question about it, that's not necessarily an expansion of the surveillance state. I think that,
I think it's going to go.
Well, I mean, AI is here. AI is everywhere. You're using it on your phone today. It's everywhere. It's a question of what they use. There's been no indication. First of all, Trump can't stop AI. That's number one. Number two, there's been no indication that he's looking to use AI to spy on us or expand the surveillance state.
But saying regulation of AI is...
Well, the debate right now is whether or not...
We've been saying the exact opposite for years.
Well, no. Anyway. Hang on a second. Let's just make sure we have the facts here. What the debate right now is whether or not states can have regulations on AI. And right now in the federal bill, it says they can't. That it has to be from the federal level only. That's the debate. That it's not a debate about whether or not AI is going to be here. It's whether the 50 individual states will have the right to regulate AI as they see fit, or it should just be done on the federal level. Now, the president really hasn't weighed in on that much. This is a debate that's playing out in Congress right now.
Gotcha.
But either way, he hasn't said, give me this bill so I can start spying on the American people. I don't think that's fair to say that. You said he wanted to use it to expand the surveillance state. I don't think that is accurate.
It will. Okay. But moving along to Iran, do you recall when General Wesley Clark came out around 2005 and said in 2001 he was given a classified list of seven countries that would be invaded one after the other after the other, and ending with Iran. Do you recall that?
Not at the moment, but go ahead and make your point.
Okay. When one looks at what countries benefit from knocking out all of those countries, it's Israel. And my only hope after this attack is that maybe Israel will stop trying to get him to do whatever they want.
Well, I agree with you. I don't want to see any more after this. I think we all agree on that point. I think that invading Iran is very different from targeted missile strikes against Iran. I'm not on board with invading Iran. I really don't think there's any support for invading Iran.
Yeah, because I think he knows where that would go. But he appears to be getting a little bipolar with anti-war, pro-war, anti-war.
Well, look, I think he does not want to see the United States in another long, protracted war. He's done this before, though, with the Moab and with the killing of Soleimani. I mean, this is what he's done this. Whether you agree with the strikes or not, there's a difference between striking facilities and invading a country and then trying to control that country. I mean, there's a difference. So you can be against...
I realize
you can
that.
Be against both. You can be for one and against the other. But it doesn't mean that one is going to lead to the other. If it does, then I'm out. I think most of people who voted for him are out. I don't think it's going to come to that. I don't think there's any indication
likewise.
That it's going to come to that. So,
yeah. I mean, I had one hope that he would be anti-war and just stop with the pointless, costly endeavors across the world.
So in your mind, these missile strikes in your mind make him then no longer anti-war?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, Israel's...
Why did you vote for him then, knowing what he did with the Moab and what he did with killing of Soleimani?
That's one example.
But you still voted for him again after he did those things in the first term. I'm genuinely asking then, why then did you vote for him the second time? What?
Given the alternative, Kamala would have happily cackled us to World War III.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yes.
So that would be why. But, yeah, man, really enjoyed listening to you.
Okay, well, I appreciate the call, Bill. Thank you. Have a great day. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli if you want to weigh in. Give me your thoughts. Give me your take. You could be pro. You could be con. It's all right. It's a safe space. I'm not here to rail on anybody for their opinion. I'm really not. I'm not. I mean, there's more than enough people doing that today. I don't need to join the chorus of that. I really don't. I have no interest in doing that. This is a complicated situation. It's also a situation that I think we all knew was coming, and it's a situation that I think is over. So, you know, that's that. I mean, I'm just telling you how it is. Just telling you how it is. You know, I think that if we had watched the first term where Trump did nothing at all in the Middle East, like no strikes, no dropping bombs, no killing terrorists, none of that at all, then yeah, I'd say this was a big 180, but it's pretty consistent with what his foreign policy was the first term, which is strategic attacks, and then we don't do anything after that. Versus if you were to compare to the Bush administration, where we go in and then we try to take over the country, take over the region, spread democracy, nation build, and that all that nonsense. There's a difference. I'm not saying you have to be for these attacks on the Iranian nuclear sites. I'm just saying that logically speaking, there is a big, big difference. Does it have the capability to draw us into a longer conflict? Of course. We never know what the unintended consequence of anything is going to be. But logically, rationally looking at this, the reason why I don't think it's going to is because, A, Iran does not have the ability to really fight us. B, Iran's allies are talking, but they're not really going to do anything. see, economically speaking, anything Iran does is suicide to itself if it does shuts off the Strait of Hormuz or anything else. D, as much as Benjamin Netanyahu and others who are lobbying the president would love to see the United States invade Iran and take over, that's not going to happen because Trump knows that that's a fool's errand. He knows that that's going to end in disaster, and he does not want to be that kind of a president. He doesn't want to be a failure. He doesn't want to be remembered as the guy who launched a military operation that is a failure. Iraq was a failure. This was not a failure Saturday night. Whether you're for it or against it, it was a huge success. Now, look, it's going to take some time till we figure out if we've really, truly crippled their ability to refine uranium or not. But by all accounts, this was at least such a big setback for them. And the message was sent, don't mess with us, that it's probably over after this, at least for some time. Now, there's going to be voices out there who are going to be saying they'll rebuild. So the only answer is we got to go in and invade the country, topple the Ayatollah, instill our own government. And then they're going to tell us how it doesn't have to be boots on the ground and reject that. In my opinion, that's nonsense. That is nonsense. That's a non-starter for me. But I know those voices are out there because I hear them. I hear them all the time. You're going to hear them again later. But that's, in my mind, ridiculous. Ridiculous. So it's not going to work. And this notion that we can be successful in doing that, no one can. Iran is Iran. It's up to the Iranian people if they want to throw this guy out and instill a new government. And, you know, there's an old saying, which is the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. I'm not saying the Ayatollah is better than the devil you don't know, but there is that fact, again, of the unintended consequence of you put someone new in place and you don't know what's going to happen. So that's also just the reality. Here is Vice President J.D. Vance over the weekend. We have no interest in putting troops on the ground in Iran. Thank God. Cut 13.
Can you rule out that getting involved in this conflict won't eventually lead to U.S. boots on the ground?
Well, the president's been very clear, Kristen. We have no interest in a protracted conflict. We have no interest in boots on the ground. The president has actually been one of the fiercest critics of 25 years of failed foreign policy in the Middle East, which is why he did what he did. A very precise, a very surgical strike tailored to an American national interest. And that national interest is Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. It would be a disaster for us and for our allies in the region. So I don't fear that this is going to become a protracted conflict because I think that we have a president who knows what's in America's interest and is willing to do the things necessary to accomplish that interest.
Good. Great. Excellent. Good. That should make you happy. That should make you happy. Now, there are voices out there who are saying, but they're going to rebuild. The only way to do this is if we have regime change. I'm sorry, but I reject those voices. Even if Iran is capable of rebuilding, that's not what I want to see. And according to the vice president, that's not what the president wants to see either. Cut 14.
First of all, we don't want to achieve regime change. We want to achieve the end of the Iranian nuclear program, John. That's America's objective, and that's what the president has set us out to do. The president, in the very tweet you mentioned, or the truth that you mentioned, John, said explicitly that he's not trying to take out the Iranian supreme leader. He's trying to take out their nuclear program. And, of course, we took a major step forward with that last night. And again, John, I think we have to back up and test some premises here. How do you achieve long-term peace? How do you prevent spiraling Middle Eastern conflict? Is it through overwhelming military power targeted to an American objective? Or is it by sort of walking yourself into these long-term protracted military conflicts? I think by choosing overwhelming force and overwhelming force tied to something that is important to the American people, that is the end of the Iranian nuclear program, we can achieve peace much more fully than if we sort of sit on our hands and hope that somehow if the Iranians get a nuclear weapon, they're going to be more peaceful. That is a stupid approach, and the president rejected it.
Okay, there you go. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli if you want to weigh in today. Let me tell you about Tri-County Auto. I am so happy that they are a sponsor. So happy that they've joined the show. So proud to drive an American car, drive a Jeep Wrangler, and you'll be proud to drive an American car too. Tri-County Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram right now, employee pricing plus for each and every one of their customers. And they have the Jeep Tops Off sales event right now. Incredible savings on things like the Jeep Compass, for example. Incredible lease programs too. Maybe you want to go truck. Maybe you want to go Ram truck. Well, listen, they got great specials on that as well. Here's the key. Tri-County Auto, great place to do business. Right off of 422, easy to get to Limerick, Collegeville, Potsdam, the whole area. It's easy. And Brian Krieger, Cheryl, the whole team there, they love us, they love you, and you'll love the pride of, you know, going to a place that you can trust, that supports the show, supports what we do here, and also sells great American cars. Now, all I got to do is go to tricountyauto.com. Remember, if the One Big Beautiful Bill passes, when it does, there's a provision in there where you can deduct the loan, the interest on the loan, if you buy an American car. So there's never been a better time to show that American pride than driving a Jeep or a Dodge or a Chrysler. I mean, Ram pickup trucks are awesome. Jeep Wranglers are great. They're all great. So please remember, TriCounty.com, employee pricing plus for everybody. TriCountyAuto.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
That's the official walk-up music of our next guest, Philadelphia's own, and the guy you want on a day like today when everybody's throwing around the I word, impeachment. He is, of course, Philadelphia's own John Yoo. He's a constitutional scholar, and we're going to ask him what his favorite cheesesteak is in just a second. But first, he is the Emanuel Heller Professor of Law at the University of California at Berkeley, somehow surviving in that lunatic state. Professor, thanks for coming back to your hometown of Philadelphia. How are you, my friend?
Oh, thanks for having me back, and I'm glad you got the music right.
We nailed it. Nailed it!
Awesome.
And, you know, I don't know if you heard over the weekend, but Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone have made up. Apparently, they had a real beef with each other for a number of years. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. I knew there was some kind of feud. I think it had to do, I think they had originally some yelling match about who was the tougher guy, I think. And, of course, it's Sylvester Stallone. I mean, come on. All that Arnold stuff, that's just, you know, that's just fake stuff with pumped up drugs. I think Stallone's really the real deal.
I agree. We're on the same page with this, my friend. Absolutely. So you've been busy. I know you were all over Fox. You've been all over Fox News yesterday, over the weekend, today, talking about all this stuff. So the first question I want to ask you is, when John Fetterman, of all people, I'm going to actually play this cut for you. Senator John Fetterman, Democrat, Pennsylvania, obviously, responding to AOC's claim that Trump should be impeached. Here's what he said on Fox News earlier today. Cut 22.
Just asking you what you think about the possibility. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says the president shouldn't be impeached because he's impulsive. What do you think of that?
No, I mean, of course, no. She knows it. I know it. We all know it. That's not going anywhere. And, you know, he's been impeached twice, and now he's still our president as well now, too. So it's not going anywhere, and I don't think that's helpful. And I think if you throw that term around, that actually diminishes what the severity of what impeachment is really reserved for.
So they're responding to the idea that the president now violated the Constitution and or the War Powers Act with his strike on Iran Saturday night, Professor John Yoo. So did he do either?
I think that, and again, this is typical people in New York. They are electing people to office who have no idea what they're doing. AOC's just completely wrong when it comes to what's the constitutional allocation of powers. Well, she's welcome to try to impeach Trump for this. I think she's probably got a list of 20 other things she wants to impeach him for. But look, the right answer is our system under the Constitution allows presidents to decide to use force abroad when the national security is threatened. Congress's check on that is the power of the purse. If Congress doesn't want a war to go forward or doesn't want a strike to happen, they can cut off funds before, or they can use the funding power afterwards to take away military assets from the president. So if AOC or Hakeem Jeffries or any other Democrats want to show that they don't approve of President Trump's strikes against Iran, then instead of claiming he should be impeached, instead of claiming they need to declare war, they can do the most obvious thing, which is try to get Congress to cut funds off. Instead, Congress is about to pass a bill, it looks like, that's going to add $60 billion to the Defense Department budget. That's not the decision of a legislature that disagrees with the president's use of military force.
Now, let's talk about the War Powers Act. And now this is, I understand it was passed in 1973, after or during Vietnam, I guess, technically speaking. What is the War Powers Act exactly, and what does it attempt to do?
The War Powers Act is actually a good example of how the Constitution has been distorted. So like I said, for most of our history, presidents have used force abroad over 130 times. Congress has only declared war five times. But after Vietnam, people were so stung by the Vietnam War experience that Congress took this idea up that had only been promoted in academic journals amongst intellectuals. And this is the idea that the declare war clause somehow means that Congress has to pre-approve all uses of force first. Never described the way the United States has actually waged war under the Constitution. But in the wake of Watergate, Congress passed, not in the wake of war, during Watergate, Congress passed over President Nixon's veto, the War Powers Resolution, which says that presidents have to get permission from Congress to use force. And even if they do, they have to get troops out within 30 days or by an extension up to 60 days. No president has ever agreed that that act is constitutional and obeyed it. And moreover, no Congress really has acted as if it were legal because they continue to vote funds for all these wars, even when presidents keep troops in the field for longer than 30 or 60 days.
So then explain to us, if you would, the difference between Article 1, where it says Congress shall declare war, and then the president's powers under Article 2, specifically Section 2, with his ability to use force without a declaration of war.
So I think the power to declare war is not a power about who decides under our domestic law who goes first. Who approves? It doesn't set up a system, you know, like the two guys, who are the weapons officers on the submarine on nuclear weapons, and they both have to turn the keys at the same time. You know, Congress and the president don't need to agree the way they do, say, for passing legislation. Instead, declarations of war are under international law the way we complain, the way we explain to the other country what our legal status is, why we're fighting. The very first declaration of war, you know which one it was in our history? It was a Declaration of Independence from Philadelphia in 1776. But you know what? A whole year before the Declaration of Independence, we've been fighting the British, Lexington and Concord, Bunker Hill. So it had nothing to do with starting the conflict. It was just the legal state of affairs. So instead, what the founders did is they split up the war power. They allowed presidents to use force first to protect the country. Alexander Hamilton justified the executive power by saying, we need to have the power in one hand so that he can defend the country from attack. And then Congress has this right to cut off funds or not even to build the military in the first place. If they don't want presidents to use force to defend us abroad, then they don't have to build B-2 bombers. What's the point of a B-2 bomber? It's not good at defending the homeland. It's designed to sneak into other countries and bomb them first.
So, Professor Yu, for example, when Thomas Jefferson used the military against the Barbary Pirates, for example, Congress did not have a declaration of war, but he used the military anyway. And obviously, yeah, Jefferson was a guy who was very much in favor of congressional or constitutional restraint. So, I mean, as early as the founding days of our country, presidents were using the military. Washington used the military to put down the Whiskey Rebellion.
Well, there I wasn't sure Washington was quite right, because I think every Pennsylvania farmer has the right to drink as much booze as they want without paying taxes. We can all agree.
I tend to agree with you, yes.
No, actually, this is where Mad Anthony Wayne comes in. Washington actually waged war against the Indians without any declaration of war. That first army got wiped out. 1,000 troops got destroyed by the Indians. Washington goes to Congress. He doesn't ask for a declaration. He gets more money. And then he hires Mad Anthony Wayne. And Anthony Wayne is the one who leads the successful war against the Indians for George Washington. No declaration. You're right. Jefferson, no declaration. Maybe the most important one, Abraham Lincoln. At the start of the Civil War, he doesn't call Congress into session. He immediately raises an army and sends it into combat against the South. No declaration there. In fact, the Supreme Court says years later that it's up to the elected branches of government to decide how to wage war, how to respond to force, and that the courts and the Constitution aren't going to try to intervene and regulate it.
I think we all remember when Franklin Roosevelt went to Congress after Pearl Harbor, gave that famous speech, "A Day Will Live in Infamy," and asked Congress to declare a state of war against the Empire of Japan and Germany. So he did that. And so I think people think that that's what has to happen.
Yes, all the time. Yeah, but it doesn't. In fact, remember, FDR is the same president who, before Pearl Harbor, was ordering the Navy to attack German submarines, ordered the Navy to escort British convoys past German submarines, occupy Greenland and Iceland. And maybe that's where Trump got his idea from. But, you know, occupy Greenland, Iceland to aid, give aid to the Allies, all without congressional permission, which drew us into closer into World War II. And then Truman in Korea, and you go on and on. And so, and look at President Obama. Attacked Libya, drove Muammar Gaddafi to his early grave, never got any congressional permission. I don't see any of these Democrats who are complaining now, demanding that Obama get a declaration of war against Libya back then.
Yeah, even used drone strikes to kill American citizens abroad. I mean, nobody seemed to care back then. So I guess then the other question is this stupid notification rule under the War Powers Act. And now you've got, you know, Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries out there whining about this and saying they weren't notified. The White House says Schumer was notified, and they're saying that they called Hakeem Jeffries, but he didn't pick up the phone and answer. What is this whole notification clause? And I'm assuming that that's under the War Powers Act, because it's obviously not in the Constitution. So it's obviously under that.
Yeah, it comes out of the War Powers Resolution, has no teeth to it, because the law doesn't say anything happens if you don't consult. And the problem, there's two problems with it. One is members of Congress don't want to be consulted. What they do is what Jeffries and Schumer are doing now, which is the president's out on a limb. This is all his political responsibility. If it goes bad, we were against it because we didn't know. If it goes well, they'll say, hey, we voted for money for the troops. We voted for the weapons that allowed it to happen. So really, we were supporting him the whole time. They want to play it both ways. The other problem with the consultation thing is, in a strike like this, as you could tell, operational secrecy is everything. If the Iranians got any inkling the attack was coming, they would have done everything they could to disperse nuclear materials, to hide the scientists, hide the machineries. And so, yes, it would be ideal if the president and Congress talked about things and consulted. But if it comes to the point of making the mission worthless or putting people's lives at stake, presidents shouldn't have to consult.
Well, yeah, because what if you consult and then the guy goes and starts tweeting about it on social media and then you ruin the whole operation? I mean, it just seems to be silly. But plus, I mean, it's nice to let Congress know. They're going to find out anyway. And either you have a commander in chief or you don't. So it's not like he has to seek their approval. It's not as if they have veto power over him. So it just seems an unnecessary and probably potentially problematic step. Let me ask you then the next question, Professor John Yu, if I could. Philadelphia's own. This notion of Joe Biden, I want to go back to him for just a second here, and the 25th Amendment to the Constitution. Because correct me if I'm wrong here, there's only one person who gets to launch nuclear weapons, and that is the president. And there's no chain of command in terms of there's no meeting of the cabinet. There's no joint chiefs have to sign off. The VP has to say, okay, the two guys in the missile silo have to agree with the president. It's his call and his call alone. And Joe Biden, in my opinion, was not able to make that call. And under the 25th Amendment, as I read it, the vice president and the cabinet had a responsibility to deal with the fact that the president was senile. Am I wrong on that?
This is exactly why I've been, and I'm not the only one, but yelling about how there has to be an investigation of what was going on in the Biden White House at the end, because aides cannot make these fundamental decisions about war and peace. That's up to the president. And if you've had aides masquerading as if they're representing the president's views, or just making them as they go because the president is, not mentally capable, then I agree with you. Then the vice president and the cabinet have a responsibility to remove him, and it's only temporary, and to put someone else in as acting president, like the vice president, because otherwise you're delegating these immense powers over the fate of the country into the hands of unelected aides rather than the person that we elected to office, the president, who should be responsible and ultimately accountable for these decisions. Unfortunately, I got to go, but, I'm more than happy to dump some more on people from Delaware in order to make a constitutional point.
Professor John Yu, thanks for your time, my friend, and coming back to your hometown of Philly. We appreciate it so much.
Love it so, and always happy to come back.
Thank you, my friend. Busy day for you, no doubt about it. As we continue along the show here today, I want to remind you that we will be having Dr. Victoria Coates on the show a little bit later today. And also, we're going to talk about the economic implications of everything with our buddy, Dr. EJ Antoni. All right, 855-839-1210 if you want to weigh in. 855-839-1210. Big story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VANARIA, VeneriaDental.com. I guess people are saying I don't look good today. Sorry, the whole Fox thing threw me off. What can I tell you? Maybe it's the lighting. I don't know. We'll work it out. We'll figure it out, but not right this second. But I do take that stuff personally because, a little shallow. But anyway. Yes. So let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. More to come. Your thoughts, your reactions on everything. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Well, the AP is reporting that one of the Iranian missiles did damage in the strike at our base in Qatar. I don't know the extent of the damage. Don't know if that's true or not. I'm just telling you the headline that I just saw a few moments ago. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Scioli. Busy day for us as we talk about everything that's going on and getting your reaction to it. Most importantly, what you think, how you feel about how everything played out and what you are hoping for the future and not hoping for the future. So first of all, if you're just joining me, I've been saying this and I've been pretty crystal clear on this. I'm not surprised this attack happened. We pretty much said it on Friday. I'm also not surprised at the timing because I told you that, we were within the 2 weeks and it was going to be within the 2 weeks. And then the other part of this is I'm confident this president does not want to get us involved in another boots on the ground Middle Eastern regime change war. So that's good. Interestingly enough, John Fetterman agrees with the strike on the Iranian nuclear sites. He's the only Democrat who apparently does. John Fetterman is playing smart politics here for Pennsylvania, no doubt about it. Josh Shapiro, by the way, also kind of echoing that as well. Look, I don't think there's any appetite for another long Middle Eastern war or even a short Middle Eastern war. There's no appetite for that. Targeting the nuclear sites, similar to dropping a Moab, similar to killing General Soleimani. We go in, we get out. Whether you agreed with those two things or not, it didn't lead to long Middle Eastern wars. The one was a war we were already in. against ISIS, obviously, which the president said ended it. And the other one was done. We waited for Iran to retaliate. They did this kind of fugazi retaliation, and it led to nothing. So that's how I see this playing out as well. They really don't have any major cards to play here. And that's good, because if this was another president, I think we would be talking about actually invading Iran and going to on the boots, you know, on the ground, regime change style war. And I think there were plenty of Republicans running who would have done that either in 16 or in 2024. I mean, I could see that from Nikki Haley, for example. I could see that from Mike Pence, but I don't see that from Trump. So whether you love the fact that he took out the nuclear strikes or you hate it, it doesn't change the fact that it's not going to lead to a long ground war here or a ground war, period. It's not. So that's that. And, you know, like I said at the start of the show, I mean, if this were unconstitutional, if this were impeachable, then you'd have to go back and you'd have to posthumously impeach presidents who were dead and presidents who were alive, because every president has done this, acted without a declaration of war from Congress, taking military action. And whether or not they followed the letter of the War Powers Act, whether the War Powers Act is constitutional or not, is irrelevant to the fact that they did it and they weren't impeached for it. So you'd have to go back and impeach all of them, basically. Obama did it a lot. I mean, Obama was dropping bombs all over the place. Bill Clinton, too. Let's not forget. This is Senator Fetterman praising the president on his work with Iran. The strike here, cut 21.
There's going to be a lot of people in my party that are going to disagree with the strike with in Iran. And I actually support that. I've been always calling for that thing. I think it was entirely appropriate. And again, there might be votes on that. So for me, that's not a war. That was a very limited military exercise. And it struck that. And then that's where we're at. So really, it really wasn't about unconstitutional or anything like that. It was like a very, very limited military engagement, and then it took them out, damaged them severely.
Justin, can you hear me? Okay, good. Our buddy Brian Brenberg was on earlier. Our buddy EJ and Tony's going to be up next. This is Brian Brenberg talking to Sandra Smith and John Roberts, saying that the markets are looking good. Take a listen.
Happening and why the stunning drop to now below $69 a barrel.
This is really unbelievable. If you want one number that crystallizes everything that Jennifer Griffin and Trey Yinks and Jillian were just saying, it's the oil price right now. We are in the 60s, okay? We are at a lower oil price right now than we were when President Trump took office. And in the context of the last 48 hours, in the context of the last week and a half, it's almost mind-boggling that the oil price, West Texas Intermediate, would have a six handle on it. Meantime, you've got the Dow up 200, 300 points at one point today. What it tells you is the risk premium on oil, the risk premium that traders are assessing on Middle Eastern activities, conflict, is basically draining out as we speak. Remember, we've been talking about the threat of Iran maybe going after the Strait of Hormuz. As oil ticks down, what it's telling you is the folks who monetarily have the biggest stake in the game in oil are saying, we don't think Iran's going to do that in any meaningful way. Stock investors are saying all the risks of inflation that we were baking in, that were maybe causing markets to go down, that's draining out of the system. This is really, these numbers tell you that the people who make it a professional endeavor to assess risk in the world are saying at this moment, risk in the Middle East is diminishing because of what Israel's accomplished, because of what the United States and this president have accomplished, and what it's meant to Iran. Clearly, Iran has gotten a signal that it has not gotten in a very long time.
There you go. Boom. All right, we'll talk about that with our buddy EJ and Tony straight ahead. Big 5 o'clock hour coming up. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.